Welcome to the 34th episode of Season 2 of the Indo-Techno Podcast. Selamat datang semuanya. I'm Alan Hallowell, founder of tech consultancy Gizmo Advisors and venture partner at Alpha JWC Ventures. Today, we want to deep dive into the InsurTech segment. InsurTech is basically the application of technological innovations, not just to squeeze out savings and drive new efficiencies from the current insurance industry model, but also significantly improve customer centricity and introduce entirely new solutions for their financial planning. The category has drawn even greater attention during the COVID-19 pandemic. Nearly all traditional players had already sought to digitize unwieldy underwriting processes. Meanwhile, lockdowns and social distancing have driven an acceleration in such initiatives. New economy platforms, moreover, whether it be e-commerce players such as Shopee or Tokopedia, online travel names, including Traveloka, or ride-sharing greats such as Grab, have also delivered a profusion of new insurance products to replicate the peace of mind that customers had developed offline as buyers of traditional insurance products. We look forward to gaining an update on this very dynamic part of Indonesia's landscape with today's guest, Harshad Lunani, founder of Qoala. Qoala has risen to become one of Indonesia's most dominant insurtech platforms. Thanks for joining us today, Harshad.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Great to be here.
We're very pleased to have you on. So Harshad, how did you come up with the idea of Qoala?
Like most people, I didn't grow up wanting to be in insurance, right? It was not a dream from my childhood, but my previous role at Bima definitely had a huge influence on helping me respect the industry a lot more and its importance for society. And given the dramatic change we're seeing in several industries in front of our eyes today, I also felt that similar change could be done in insurance, and in particular in emerging markets where the importance of insurance is misunderstood because a single event can knock a family out and put them into poverty. So from that perspective, it made a lot of sense to want to try and innovate in this space. And from a timing perspective as well, given the adoption of technology and smartphones, it was the right time for us to think about trying to innovate in this space again.
Excellent. So let's start with the basics. What is Indonesia's current insurance penetration rate? And how might that compare to markets such as the US, China, and here in Singapore?
Indonesia is quite far behind, unfortunately. Currently, most estimates would peg it at anywhere between 1% to 2%. Whereas the more mature markets such as China and Singapore and US would be anywhere between 6 to 12, 13% of GDP. So it is a long way behind. But at the same time, perhaps a more telling metric is that Indonesia, which has doubled the GDP per capita of India, is at half of India's penetration. So that really tells you that it's a highly underpenetrated market, also a very highly fragmented market. But equally, that's where the opportunity lies because of that.
Wow, that's a very powerful comparison with India you just made. Now, Harshad, I, on the other hand, have heard that the average Indonesian may ultimately not have the same instinct to insure aspects of his or her life compared to his or her peers regionally and globally. Would you agree with that assessment?
That's an interesting question. Hard to be very precise on this, but I would tend to disagree, I guess, because I think with life insurance, it's a very difficult concept to understand because it's not something tangible. And I think, therefore, this is something where education can really improve a lot. And if you go back to the 70s or 80s to even the US or Japan, there were similar questions asked. And in emerging markets, we typically see that value is based on assets first and valuing your own life comes a little bit secondary. And there's an education piece there. And I think Indonesia, as penetration rises and if us and some of the other players do a good job, this will change. And in fact, during the pandemic, we already started seeing some movement of this where people started realizing that if they were insuring their cars for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, how is it possible that they would insure their life for less than that? And I think that that change is starting now.
Fascinating. So you're implying that there really isn't any cultural distinction which might account for the low levels, but instead we'll probably travel the same kind of economic evolution and increasing wealth trends that drive adoption of insurance. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I would say so. And also, I think insurance has been marketed pretty badly in the past. And I think if we can get some better products into the market, which allow customers more transparency, and at the same time, of course, ensure that this can really be relatable to their lifestyle and affordability, it can lead to a change.
So you're suggesting that educating consumers in the value of insurance is crucial. What are the best ways to improve literacy dramatically over a short period of time?
There's a couple of ways we look at it. One is If I go back to my childhood, what sticks with me are things which I experienced rather than what I was taught in a classroom only. I'm a big believer in learning about things through experience, and therefore same with insurance. We believe claims can have a big role in helping people understand insurance because that's the moment of truth. And if you get claims, you start having more belief and confidence. That's one. And secondly, it's also an aspect of simply trying to think about how can we engage you more and more at your critical points in life. When people start a family, when you buy a first car or home, or when there's a milestone in your life, those are critical moments. And at that point, if there's an influencing factor, it can really accelerate the education process a lot.
Understood. I also have seen things like promotions and incentives as another powerful conversion tool in converting a customer to entirely new solutions, such as free shipping in order to bring on a new e-commerce customer. In the case of InsurTech, what are the most powerful commercial drivers or incentives to the adoption of policies in Indonesia in your mind?
This is like all industries, commercials can make some changes and incentives. And as insurance is largely driven by agents who are incentive driven. So yes, it does make some difference for sure. But at the same time, it's a regulated space. So I would say that we can't go as far as perhaps some of the other platforms in other spaces have been able to do, given the regulations and so on. But I think especially with agents, this can be a way to grow. And I think it's important to recognize that agents will probably be in the industry for a long time. And actually, they have quite a critical role to play. And this is seen even in the most advanced markets, such as the United States. So I think they will be around and they actually do serve a strong purpose. And yes, they're incentive driven, but that's sometimes also a good thing if done in the right ways.
So a lot of the internet economy bases its promise on disintermediating members of the traditional vertical that they are in, whether it's removing distribution layers as an e-commerce player or the travel agent in online travel. But your suggestion here is that the agent remains an ever critical part of the InsurTech value proposition. Is that correct?
Very much so. They've proven to be very resilient against these changes in this sector. And one of the key reasons, again, is that there's a fundamental difference between how other platforms are adopted versus insurance. Other platforms are more for daily use cases or high frequency use cases. Insurance is perhaps a once or twice in a year use case. And at the same time, because it's a large ticket size purchase and because it comes with so many variations and so much complexity in the product, most consumers are not able to make choices on a self-service basis. The number of factors to consider are too many, and hence they need assistance in these journeys. And even if you, let's say, take the example of Policy Bazaar in India, which is the largest online aggregator, even they have a huge network of telesales agents who help assist customers. And this is key to the space because of the dynamics of the product. And we don't believe that that will go away easily. If it does, it will start with the more commoditized products, which are mandatory, perhaps, such as car insurance in most markets and so on. But for several other products, that will not be the case for a long, long time to come.
I fully understand. Now, I believe that Qala saw something like 6x growth last year. What drove that expansion?
It was a positive year for us overall, definitely. A couple of key reasons, I would say. One is the execution of our strategy. I'm a strong believer that in Southeast Asia, it's all about execution. And our platform, which allows ordinary people to become agents and also allows insurance agents to become more digitally savvy, and have a chance to use a tool which can help them really perform their activities in seconds rather than days, it has been a very powerful tool for them. And that allowed us to really ride on that and grow. And together with that, we also had some success with some of our key partners within the larger ecosystem who've adopted us and allowed us to work with them closely to drive adoption with consumers, their consumers. And there as well, some key partners such as Traveloka have helped us grow a lot.
Now, Harshad, I've heard from a couple of your partners that you personally are very roll up your sleeves in working with them. I'm hopefully not revealing any state secrets by revealing that the people at OYO most recently spoke your praises and your willingness to accommodate some of their unique requirements. Where does this tendency to work at the front line of the company come from?
That's very kind of them. But first of all, as much as my role now is as a founder of the company, and obviously I have to look at strategic things, I've always been very fascinated with the problem solving, right? It's something which is a general tendency or a drive within me. And so when I see a problem, it's hard to not be drawn to it. And from time to time, it's still the most exciting thing that you can do sometimes. And so when there are large problems to solve and it needs perhaps a little bit more creativity, I would love to find some time to still dive in and see what I can do. And this is something which also helps the team, because it's something which I can learn from them, but equally they can perhaps learn a few things from me as well. And overall, it's good for the camaraderie within the team as well.
Excellent. Great to hear. Now, Harshad, you've spoken in past conversations with me about Uberizing the insurance agent force. Can you tell us more about that?
It's a very powerful concept, Alan. If you ask me what will help Indonesia rise and have a far higher insurance penetration. And the concept is similar to someone like a Uber or a Gojek or a GrabDo, where really they came in and used the potential of technology together with a platform kind of style to transform, let's say, the transportation industry. Bluebird is already here, which is a great taxi company, but really they could step it up a notch. Similarly with insurance, the traditional industry exists, but we believe that with a platform-based approach, by providing more choices as well as transparency and taking the technicalities of it out so that individual people, everyone has their own network and friends and family who they can relate to. But what they cannot do is the technicalities of insurance and the pricing and underwriting and the issuance. And if our platform can take care of all that, what we rely on is people's networks. And that way, everyone can play a role in this space. And in particular, we believe that while the likes of Gojek and Grab have done a fantastic job of providing millions of people with employment, most of them do tend to be men. And we believe that with insurance, this can be extended to women as well. And so we believe it's a powerful way to provide employment for millions, but in particular, also be a choice for women.
And when does that vision of empowering women as insurance agents really become ubiquitous? Is it something that's already happening? Is it a 2 or 3 or 5 year vision?
The funny thing is that in the life insurance space, there are already more women agents than males. What we are trying to do is dramatically increase the number.
Understood. Now, looking at another angle of this story, how long does it take the average customer to be approved or rejected for a plan?
There are two types there. So one is insurance, which is unrelated to your personal decisions or personal behavior. So for example, if you're catching a flight, you cannot as an individual delay the flight or cause the flight to have a problem. So in this case, usually issuance can be instant because the risk is completely independent. But of course, then there are other instances such as your health or your life and so on, where partly you're responsible. And those tend to be where it needs more time. For example, in motor insurance, a typical insurer would take between 7 to 12 days to issue a policy. We would probably do it in about 6 hours to 24 hours.
So a very measurable improvement on that side. Now, Harshad, what are our most popular products currently?
Most popular would be travel, even today, despite the pandemic, smartphone insurance, and car insurance. But I would say we see a lot of drive, in particular from segments, to buy health and life insurance now. But I would say that we probably need to work harder to get that right.
Understood. And just with travel insurance, is it most commonly a voluntary radio button that you click before you purchase the ticket? Or is the airline throwing it in? Is the platform adding it as an incentive?
This is a great question, Alan, because this is a philosophical question to some extent as well, right? Because all of those are possible. But as a company, we've taken the view that we want consumers to make a choice, because that's the only part which leads to education. And that's why we do micro policies before education, right? And if you think about it for yourself, your credit card probably gives you some insurance, but you, because they bundle it in, probably don't quite know what it is, and neither do you have a full appreciation for it. But if you made that choice, that's a different thing, because it means you value insurance, you're willing to pay money for it. So for us, this is where we're perhaps a little bit different, and we focus on aspects where customers make a choice. This is very important for us to do, and we believe that this drives a much higher quality of customer to us.
Well, on the topic of the customer, can you share with our audience some interesting facts or figures on our customers, whether it's frequency of claim or tendency to buy new products from us, etc.?
Sure. A couple of interesting facts. So the largest claim we ever paid out was about $1 million. It was actually just about 35 days after the policy was bought. So that was a pretty life-changing event for the customer, no doubt. But even for us, quite challenging, because that was a surprise claim. And so we were happy that we were able to support it in the manner that we did. Another interesting fact would be that one person bought a policy of ours 38 times. So that was a very interesting and nice thing to hear, that the person liked it enough to consistently keep buying the policy, right? And last thing I can share is about 20% of our customers have bought multiple policies with us.
Wow, that's a very healthy number. I would be forsaking our audience if I weren't to ask you for a little more detail on that $1 million payout. Can you tell us the broad use case or circumstances behind that?
Without going into specifics, this person had a warehouse full of expensive smartphones and it burned down. This was within a few days of buying the policy, right? And it was $1 million and it was life-changing for almost anybody. And so those are the specifics I can get into. But obviously, given the nature of the claim, the size, it requires a formal investigation. And I'm very glad that we were able to assist there because we have our own internal investigators and support this person in getting the rightful claim.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you mentioned that 20% of your customers subscribe to more than one product. Do you have a target in mind where that 20% level can get to?
If you take a country like Germany, an average person has 6 to 7 policies, which is a lot. I don't think we're at that level yet. And right now, Indonesia is very much a 0-to-1 story. Most people have 0 policies and hopefully they can get to 1. And hence why having this agent platform technology is so important, because they can play a huge role in being able to touch customers at those points of need and turn them into actually customers who are protected. So while this is an important number that we'd love to have grow and become 2, 3, 4, 5, for the foreseeable future, our goal is how to go from 0 to 1 first.
Makes eminent sense. So Harshad, what interesting behaviors did we see emerge during COVID?
The most interesting behavior, I would say, was the change in customers' viewpoint on how much their life was worth. How should they value life insurance? And we saw customers who typically would say, I want some life insurance cover, perhaps $20,000, $30,000. And it was effectively to say that they were insured, maybe to their families or to themselves. But with the pandemic, we saw a dramatic change. And now most people would ask us for $200,000 of coverage or more. And so obviously, it's great to see that change happening. But I also think that this points towards one of the big challenges for the space, because insurers are not yet ready to tackle them in the manner that's fitting for such customers, because such products and such coverages have largely been reserved for traditional channels such as bank assurance and so on. And now that customers are demanding such things online and with other platforms, we need to find a way to resolve that. This is one of the challenges that we're working towards.
Wow. How much is my life worth? That's a question that Albert Camus or Jean-Paul Sartre or one of the other existential authors would have been asking. But I guess it's quite relevant here. Now, Harshad, how do we co-create products with insurance underwriters? Can you give us a good example?
With co-creation, right? Effectively, what we're trying to do is, first of all, we try to have a segment we think needs a certain product or could do with help in certain areas. We try to understand the broader use case first, and ideally collect data on that so that we have a good understanding of the risks as well as the service that customers will want. That's the starting point. And from that, it goes into turning that into a probability model, right, of what can happen overall. And using that, we're able to go to insurers and have a discussion on the scale and the potential for these kind of products. At the end of the day, insurance is about probability. And by providing this information, which on this new segment of customers or new segment of service, we're able to help insurers get, let's say, more credibly comfortable with this kind of risk. And hence, it can lead to a creation where the insurer continues to take the risk, but we typically take over the operations and the customer interactions, because these tend to be high-frequency events. And I spoke earlier that we want education through experience. So we purposefully choose products which have a higher frequency of claims and so on. And with this, it kind of breaks the traditional insurance model, which is designed for high-value, low-frequency. We are designed for low value, high frequency. And so our systems are able to operate at much more scale and effectiveness in terms of cost. And hence, we can co-create where they take the risk, we take over operations and customer interactions.
Now, I assume you love all of your co-creating partners as you would members of your family, but is there one that you're proudest of or a couple that you can cite?
Our work with Traveloka is something we're very proud of, because we've been able to bring many, many use cases to the market. So that's one area I would signal, from something like a flight delay, a simple product like that, to a much more complex product such as changing your mind and not feeling like going to the trip that you planned for and getting a full refund for a non-refundable ticket. That's quite powerful. So I would say that that's one. Another one I would point to is a smartphone product, where we're happy that we were able to provide a service and experience which would allow customers to get their phones repaired in record time. And this is critical because we're all so dependent on our smartphones, right? And in some ways, smartphones are the new motorcycles, because they're just as expensive, but far more fragile. And for most people, until the age of 22, 23, 25, it might be the most expensive thing you own. So it's a very valuable part of your life. And we're happy that we were able to help them with that, protecting that key part of their life.
Harshit, what are the most valuable data and insights that Koala can generate for our underwriter partners that nobody else can?
This is a great question because insurance, as I said, is a game of probability, and to get probability right, you need more data. And so from that perspective, definitely, whether we are talking about when we work with platform partners such as Traveloka, Tokopedia, and so on, obviously, there's many data points that customers leave, and we're able to use that to better segment customers or better understand their needs and affordability and so on, because they obviously leave a large digital footprint using those platforms, and some of those get collected. But at the same time, obviously, when consumers interact either with us directly or through our agents, we're also able to understand a lot of things, because everything from things that are clicked, but also things such as how much time is spent on certain screens allows us to understand what is the customer concerned about or worried about or really paying attention to. And with that, we can tweak the user experience, the product experience, to ensure that it aligns much better. Now, over a longer period of time, it can even result in new product creation, because we can even understand that if certain drop-offs are happening, that this product for this segment of customers is just not doing the job. And it can lead to an optimization of that product or perhaps even entirely a new product.
Understood. It would seem to me that these innovations are significantly dependent on the strength of our development team. Is all of our development done in Indonesia? If not, where do you have your engineering and development?
Yeah, a large part of our development team does sit in Indonesia, but we now also have a hub in Bangalore in India, where we have a small team of engineers as well.
Excellent. On to something entirely unrelated. When we come back to the policyholder, who actually owns the relationship with that policyholder? Is it ourselves? Is it the underwriter? How would you describe ownership of the customer?
It depends on a couple of factors. Typically, it will sit either with us or maybe a joint between us and the platform partner and the agent. In our model, definitely the insurers get access to a new set of customers, but I wouldn't say that the ownership shifts to them.
Understood. So ultimately, anyone who is coming through the Koala platform, you could theoretically cross-sell to, is that correct?
Not completely. Like I said, if the customers come through agents, we want to protect and respect the agents because that's their customer. And there we would not take any action. But obviously, if customers come to us directly, then it's a different matter. And so it's often a joint relationship where we will serve them. For example, even if an agent brings a customer, a claim can be serviced by us, but we would not retarget them because we would want to respect the agent for that.
Fully understand. Now, Harshit, what changes are required to drive adoption from a regulatory perspective?
I think being a regulated space, there's a lot that regulators can do, and I'm sure they're trying as well. A couple of big ones, which are perhaps more low-hanging fruit and probably will happen, I'm sure. One will be whether motor insurance will become mandatory. So far, I would say Indonesia is perhaps the only major country I know of where motor insurance is not mandatory. This will be one upcoming change, and that'll be a seismic activity because it will trigger the industry to leap forward in a very, very significant manner for two reasons. One is the sheer scale of the motor insurance industry will increase, but effectively it means everyone who has a car or a bike now begins to understand insurance. So that can lead to other products also being interesting for them. So that'll be a big one. I would say that's step one. There's a couple of other steps possible, such as a little bit of liberalization in the tariffs and so on for certain products. But I would say this would be the first step.
I understand. Now, Harshit, given how large and underpenetrated Indonesia is, as you've described it earlier in our conversation, is there anything to be said for going regional over the next few years? I, for instance, saw news of your acquisition in Thailand earlier this year.
We did enter Thailand recently through an acquisition. Sometimes, as much as we're super interested in Indonesia, we did realize that Thailand is actually a much larger market. Slightly better penetration and education, but still significantly under, say, US or Singapore and so on. So that's one. But equally, I felt that Thailand and Indonesia share many similarities. But it's just that with Thailand, we could accelerate some of our growth because of the fact that it's a slightly better educated market. And hence, if we could apply our platform there, we could accelerate our path.
Excellent. And so is further regional expansion in the cards over the next couple of years, or do you feel like you have your hands full for the time being?
We're comfortable for now. I mean, from time to time, we do operate in a couple of markets just to support our partners who are regional, but the main focus will be these two.
Understood. Well, Harshit, I really get the sense of an industry in deep flux and thus offering great opportunity for the innovators just listening to you today. And it's great to know that entrepreneurs such as yourself are leading this innovation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks very much for the opportunity and have a nice day ahead.
You're very welcome. We hope our listeners have enjoyed today's episode. As always, please consider sharing any feedback that you have about the Indo Techno podcast with us. Terima kasih telah mendengarkan. Sampai jumpa lagi.